George Whitmore was writing a book about people whose lives had been changed by the AIDS epidemic when he discovered a small strawberry-colored spot on his calf. He was diagnosed with AIDS. That was in 1986. He went ahead with his work on the book, and it's just been published. It's titled Someone Was Here, Profiles in the AIDS Epidemic. The people he profiles include a man who has AIDS and his counselor from the group Gay Men's Health Crisis, a nurse in a municipal hospital where many of the patients are poor or homeless, and a mother whose estranged son is dying of AIDS. Whitmore is a novelist and freelance journalist who has written for the New York Times Magazine, The Village Voice, and The Advocate. I spoke with him from the NPR Bureau in New York. I asked him if he suspected that he would get AIDS when he began writing the book.
I was pretty sure that I was infected. We were negotiating the contract for the book when it became, you know, sort of evident that I was going to have AIDS. It generally came as a surprise to me. Being infected certainly doesn't mean that you're going to get full-blown AIDS. It does in a certain percentage of cases.
Had you taken the test, the
No.
The antibody test?
No, I thought maybe the test was more upsetting than not knowing.
I think it's a hard choice to make whether to take it or not.
Well, it is, because you don't know if you test positive exactly what to do about it, since there isn't a treatment.
You say that in your book that your reasons for writing Someone Was Here were partly altruistic and partly selfish.
Yes.
What were those reasons in both categories?
Well, with a fatal disease like AIDS, bargaining always goes on. It's part of the process of denial, I think, for most people. You try to find ways to deny that you have it or deny that it's fatal. Part of my denial was that if I wrote about AIDS, I wouldn't go on to develop AIDS. You kind of strike a bargain with fate, I think. Obviously the bargain didn't work out in my case, and how could it? But it's the sort of thing that allows you to kind of go on and keep functioning. And after I was diagnosed, I kept striking little bargains with myself all the way along.
What kind of bargains?
Things would be fine as long as I finished the book, and now in this case, things will be fine as long as the book comes out and I hold it in my hands. It's a little game you play to yourself, with yourself, to keep sane sometimes. I'm sure anybody who has a serious disease knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Now, the reasons you just gave for writing the book were the reasons that you'd probably put under the selfish
yeah.
category. What about the, as you define it, altruistic category for writing the book?
Well, I thought it was important. I'm certainly not the only one who's writing about AIDS. I thought it was important for me, as a gay writer, with a certain kind of track record as a gay writer, to witness what was happening to my community. The time when I started writing seriously about AIDS, about 3 years ago, most of the things that were appearing in the media were scientific and political stories, and frankly, there weren't that many of them. I really wanted to show what was happening to people in the what the human side of AIDS was, what the human toll was, especially since there was such a stigma attached to AIDS, and there was a lot of hysteria at that time. I wanted to show that real, recognizable, sympathetic people had AIDS, that people with AIDS weren't from Mars, which was the impression that you could get.
Did you want to do it in such a way so that the people wouldn't be seen as, quote, AIDS victim?
Well, I wanted to show people living with AIDS as opposed to victimized by AIDS. I wanted to take some of the stigma off of the disease, because people with AIDS were being treated then more than now as lepers.
Now, how far into the writing of the book were you diagnosed as having AIDS yourself?
Well, right after we had agreed to do the book, I was diagnosed.
Did you want to tell your publishers that?
Pardon me?
Did you tell your publishers that?
I didn't tell my publishers for a long time.
Was that a hard decision to make, whether to tell them or not?
Oh, it was clear that I was going to have to tell them at some point, but I had to gather myself together and be able to go on.
You know, I think that when some people find out that they have AIDS, that they want to almost not talk about it and to not be too obsessed with it, to get away from it. And this was coming for you at a time when you were totally immersing yourself in the subject and spending all your time, you know, thinking about and speaking to and writing about people who also had the disease.
Well, there was a certain lag time before I started doing my interviews and started writing the book. I really had to make a major adjustment before I... There was no doubt in my mind that I would go on to write this book. It was, you know, an assignment that nobody could possibly turn down if you're any kind of a reporter. But I had to get my personal life in order before I was able to go on and do the work.
What do you mean by that? What did that entail?
Well, it entailed dealing with the crisis of diagnosis. You fear it. You try to accommodate the possibility in your life. But then actually dealing with the diagnosis is a pretty heavy thing, obviously. Telling friends and family. Deciding, since you have a death sentence hanging over your head, deciding what you're going to do with what may be not a very short period left to you. Not a very long period, excuse me. I think that most people who've gone through this do what I did, and that's... you decide that you don't know, and especially with AIDS, which is a very strange, unpredictable disease, you end up doing a lot of the things that you were going to do before you were diagnosed. A lot of the, you know, once the dust settles, you go on with your life and you try to lead life the way you were leading it before. The most important thing is to try to have a normal life under the circumstances.
It's interesting that you say that, because I think a lot of people fantasize that if they found out that they had any kind of usually terminal illness, that they'd have this really different life, that they'd do all the things that they never dared do before and that kind of stuff. You know the fantasy.
Well, I do know the fantasy, and I think that happens with a lot of people, and, you know, more power to them. In my case, I'm in the career I want to be in. I'm very happy doing what I do. I'm a writer. I write books. And for me to continue to do that is a big blessing. And obviously writing about AIDS is something that was good for me to do. I had already finished a novel that I was very happy with, and I was ready to do a nonfiction book.
My guest is writer George Whitmore, and his new book is titled Someone Was Here, Profiles in the AIDS Epidemic. You have an interesting range of people that you write about, and some of them are middle class, some of them are poor, some of them are health workers, one of them's a mother of a son who had AIDS. In writing these different profiles, did you get the feeling that the issues were different at all depending on whether you were poor or middle class, the issues that you had to face when you found out you had AIDS? Economic issues, for instance, and how that affected your ability to cope with the disease?
Some of the issues are the same. One thing that unites everybody who deals with AIDS is denial. My son is not going to die from this. I'm going to be able to save him. I don't have this disease. I really have something else. I'm going to live forever. Those are the kinds of things that people who are involved with AIDS say at one point or another. I think that economic issues are very paramount aside from the issues of disease. AIDS is very devastating economically, and the poor people that I wrote about are already victimized by their economic circumstances. Many of the people that I wrote about it Lincoln Hospital in the South Bronx are people who already have a lot of chaos in their lives by virtue of being poor. Their destitution has ripped apart their families in many cases. Some of the families are very strong and coping well. And AIDS is just the straw that broke the camel's back. Whole families... usually associated with IV drug use, that's was a mode of transmission for the family members who have AIDS. Whole families have already been devastated by drug use. and whole families are dying. It's a bad situation that is made indescribably intolerable by the presence of AIDS.
There's some bizarre health bureaucracy types of problems that mm-hmm. people who you wrote about ran into. For instance, the mother of a son who had AIDS and died got a disability check after her son's death. She was told to cash it.
Yes.
And then later found out that she was expected to return the money because she was told later on that she shouldn't have cashed it. So then she had to pay it back in installments. Did you mm-hmm. run into a lot of stories like that?
I think that generally what I ran into was what anybody who has worked in healthcare or in social welfare already knows very well. The system doesn't work. The system chews people up. The system makes the job of doctors and nurses and social workers even more difficult. There's supposed to be a safety net in this country, and there isn't for scores and scores of people. Things just don't function in our large municipal hospital system.
I want to get back to something that you were saying before about how a lot of people, when they get AIDS, go through a period of denial.
Mm-hmm.
And you give the example of one man who kept saying to himself, I won't let it stop me. I'm going to beat it. I guess that's a pretty common reaction. Do you think that that kind of reaction is supported frequently by friends and family who are really hoping and praying that their loved one will beat it and think, you know, like want to be supportive and offer that kind of support, that kind of, yeah, and you will beat it support?
Sure, people say that. I think there are examples, of course, of people who just go to bed and pull the covers up over their head. People who become very suicidal. People who don't tend to their health care. Perhaps what you're saying is that friends and family and the patient are participating in a kind of charade. They're play-acting that this isn't really happening. You know, one of my feelings about that is more power to them. It's very important to ignore some of these realities in order to go on.
Well, you know, one of my friends, when he found out he had AIDS, told another friend that he felt one of the things he really wanted to strive for was to die with grace,
mm-hmm.
like he saw a good friend of his die.
Mm-hmm.
And the friend who this was told to said, no, by saying that one of your ambitions is to die with grace, you're kind of laying down and waiting to die. You shouldn't be thinking about dying. You should be thinking about the time you have left to live.
You know, people who aren't facing this have all sorts of ideas about how you should behave and what kind of a positive attitude you're supposed to have. And I think that you just have to go with what the person who's diagnosed really feels and needs.
You describe yourself in the book as someone who values pragmatism and realism over a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did that affect your reaction to finding out you had AIDS?
It's very important to me to be realistic about this. And it's constantly frustrating to me because it's hard to know what the reality is going to be. I had the diagnosis of Kaposi sarcoma, which is a skin cancer. And that is considered a fortunate diagnosis. I've already had 2 years. That's 6 months over what most people can expect who are diagnosed with this disease. I'm increasingly disabled in various ways, but there's no way for me to predict, quote, how much more time I might have or, you know, what drugs might pop up in the next year or so. My main task is, aside from, you know, trying to be realistic about this, is living with uncertainty. And that's, I think I'm learning a little more about living with uncertainty, but one really can't say.
What's the state of your health now?
There are some mysterious things going on, but I still haven't been hospitalized yet.
You know, in talking about things like living with uncertainty, I think a lot of people, when they are ill, will become more religious or turn to religion. People who have never been religious before
Definitely.
Might turn to religion for a sense of, in the hopes of giving meaning to what they're going through and for for support and nourishment. Did that happen to you at all? I don't know if you are or have ever been religious.
No. I certainly respect what I've witnessed, that religion has sustained a great many people and through the crisis of diagnosis and through the death of a loved one. It's a very observable phenomenon.
Do you ever wish that you could turn to religion, that you know, that you were the kind of person who could do that?
No, I haven't. Mm-hmm.
No, you're taking AZT now?
No, I stopped taking
AZT. Can I ask you about the decisions that you went through in deciding to take it and then to stop it?
Mm-hmm. I wanted to take AZT.
Let me explain what AZT... Why don't you explain what AZT is for listeners who aren't familiar with it?
AZT is virtually the only drug that the FDA has approved for AIDS patients. Early on, the federal government decided that AZT was going to be its drug and threw money and support behind AZT. And AZT has proved useful for certain categories of people with AIDS. I think that in general we can say that 50% of the people with AIDS who try AZT can't take it because it leads to debilitating side effects. Anemia is the most frequent one. There were, by the way, other drugs on the federal government's menu that they didn't throw their support behind, and they're just starting to test now. So what we're faced with is a situation where if you can't take AZT, there isn't anything at present that is really going to be helpful for you.
So did you have an allergic reaction to it and have to stop?
No, I was too anemic to take it. I had blood transfusions twice.
I want to talk with you more about your writing and, mm-hmm. and also about, you know, your confronting AIDS. But first, we have to take a short break. My guest is writer George Whitmore. His new book is titled Someone Was Here, Profiles in the AIDS Epidemic, and it's a series of profiles of people who have AIDS, people whose friends or lovers have AIDS, and people who are in the medical field and work with people who have AIDS. We'll talk more after this break. This is Fresh Air. George Whitmore is my guest, author of Someone Was Here, Profiles in the AIDS Epidemic. Now, as you told us, you found out you had AIDS as you were writing this book about other people whose lives have been affected by AIDS. Now that the book is finished, are you still writing a lot?
I'm trying to decide what my next project is going to be. I think it's going to be a novel. And I've returned to freelancing. I generally write about architecture and design, and that's a relief after writing about AIDS so long.
So you're going to start a novel now?
I hope to, yes.
Can I ask you a kind of touchy question? Novels take really long time to write. Mm-hmm. Is that part of the reason why you want to write one? To have a really long-term project to start on?
No, I haven't thought about the time it's going to take to write it. I have thought about the subject matter and what I'm interested in going on to next.
Have you run into much discrimination from people who know that you have AIDS? You said before that you think that the problems of people being treated as if they were lepers were worse a few years ago when you started writing the book than they are now.
I think the public perception of people with AIDS was more hysterical then, which is not to say that it isn't going on now. It certainly is. It seems to me that, you know, it dies down and then the hysteria rises again. It's very important that there be programs like this, that there be books, that there be TV shows showing people with AIDS as ordinary, recognizable human beings.
The first chapter in your book and the article that led to your book was about a man who was who had AIDS and about his buddy, someone who helped him out a lot through the Gay Men's Health Crisis Center. Have you ever had a buddy or thought about that?
I have a counselor now from Gay Men's Health Crisis.
Do you?
Yes. It was one of the first things that I did when I was diagnosed.
Why was that one of the first things that you did?
You really need somebody to help you through the labyrinth of the healthcare system and health insurance. You need somebody on tap sometimes to talk to, although I have a lot of friends who are giving me very good support. I certainly needed the help of the gay men's health crisis to apply for Social Security disability and the other perplexing things that you're confronted with.
Now that your book has come out, you're really public in a lot of ways. Like, everyone who knows you knows that you have a new book and knows, because you mentioned in the book, that you have AIDS,
mm-hmm.
even people who might not have known that before.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is it a kind of whole separate predicament to be a public, you know, person with AIDS?
It's something I never wanted to be. It really surprises me that it's come this far, but obviously it's necessary. I think when you do accomplish something that you're proud of, you want other people to know it. I want to promote my book. I want people to read it. There was also I think it would have been terrible hypocrisy and really wrong to write this book without coming out as a person with AIDS. Since I've never been in the closet as a gay writer, that made the decision easier.
In writing your book, you had to witness the lives of many people who have had AIDS, and I'm sure you've watched many of your friends suffer with AIDS as well. And it means, in a way, that you've seen all these different ways of dealing with it?
Yes, I'd say so, yeah.
Has that been something that you've thought about a lot, you know, like watching people with AIDS and thinking, like, how do I want to behave with it? Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think the man who you talked about before, who wanted to die with grace,
mm-hmm.
I think that's what all of us, whether we have AIDS or not, want to see ourselves as living our lives gracefully. And if we have to die, dying in a dignified manner. Unfortunately, that's been denied a great many people with AIDS because of the stigma attached to the disease, the irrationality and prejudice that surround it. I'm really amazed at what I've witnessed, at the strength and beauty and determination of people, people who you wouldn't expect it of. I've seen an enormous amount of courage in the 3 years since I started writing about AIDS. It's really very impressive, and of course it continues and right up to today. One of the things that I wanted to write about that was very important to me was how the gay community had reacted to this disease. And I'd say that the courage that I saw there is phenomenally impressive. It extends to the most deprived, poverty-stricken people that I saw, too, at Lincoln Hospital in the South Bronx. People who don't have the resources that a lot of gay men had, people who don't have the family support, exhibiting wonderful dignity and courage, too.
You know, you mentioned the gay community, and you've written that you really think that the gay community wasn't a community until the AIDS crisis. Would you explain that?
Well, I think that a lot of the things that we would look for in a community that we see in the black community or the Hispanic community, we didn't see in the gay community in the 70s. We did see a civil rights movement. We saw a very strong subculture. We also saw a gay culture with writers and theater and institutions of its own, but the very definition of gay community is difficult because we come from all races, we come from all ethnic groups, we come from all social backgrounds, and that leads to a certain amount of fragmentation. It makes it hard to organize politically. What we saw was a diversity of voices and efforts. I think AIDS has united us in a way that a lot of political issues didn't unite us before and couldn't. Perhaps the community that's emerged is a community of suffering. That's very unfortunate, but that's what's happened historically, it seems to me.
What do you mean by that?
That AIDS was the occasion to bring us together.
What do you mean by it being historically a community of suffering?
Well, there was plenty of suffering to go around.
Mm-hmm.
There was plenty of discrimination to go around before AIDS happened. I think that AIDS has united us in grief and mourning. It's also united us in a struggle against death. That was the occasion. There other things could have happened to do the same thing. I feel terrible personally that AIDS has been the occasion that has shown our courage and our strength.
After writing so eloquently about the lives of other people who have AIDS, are you keeping a journal about your own life?
No, I'm not.
It sounds very intentional. You're not doing it.
No, it's just something that doesn't work for me. I think that what's happening to me and what happens to anybody with AIDS, in my case, it's interesting. I think I don't want to write about myself so much because I don't know what the end of the story will be.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much for talking with us about your life and your writing. And I wish you the best, and thank you very much.
Thank you. It was nice meeting you.
My guest has been writer George Whitmore, and his new book is titled Someone Was Here, Profiles in the AIDS Epidemic. He was diagnosed as having AIDS while he was writing the book. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.